Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So we've talked on this podcast about, I think, many of the great things that the great capabilities of artificial intelligence, the things that's disrupting, the things it can do. And we spent a lot of time talking about AI engineering specifically. But not everyone, as I've mentioned a few times, is so enthusiastic about AI. There's AI skeptics, and we've addressed, I think, some of the criticisms that are more kind of fundamental to AI as it's emerging, namely the idea that large language models or LLMs are a very glamorous and tempting, but ultimately dead end for this kind of concept of AGI. But one of the more pragmatic, I think, and fundamental criticisms about AI is the idea of job loss, which I guess is kind of an unintended effect of maybe AI being good enough to displace some things that humans did previously. One of the main areas I think that we're all seeing AI beginning to take over functions that humans did in ways that make us think, has someone's job already been lost because of this, is in the provision of customer support, and specifically Tier 1 customer support, the kind of initial chat you get to when you say something is wrong. And it always feels, I guess, from the consumer's standpoint, we had before true AI chatbots, it was often these rule-based logic things that were absolutely atrocious and everybody hated them. And I think a lot of that kind of bad will has carried over into the AI chatbots. But even when they're better, there's something that sometimes feels a bit disrespectful when you've paid, you know, it could be a few hundred dollars in a subscription and something doesn't go wrong and the company can't even put a human on the other end of the line. But I guess the pragmatics of customer service or the scale often just doesn't make any sense. If we think about services like Google, Workspace, etc., there's just so many users that unless they have a workforce of, you know, tens of thousands of AI, of human workers, and Amazon, which has gone, their customer support has gone, I think, absolutely terrible over the course of the past few years. It seems to me that the human customer support model was kind of already in the process of collapsing in upon itself. But that doesn't, regardless of the quality support that artificial intelligence can provide, including, I guess, in the best case scenario, effective tier one support, and then escalation to a human support agent at the higher tiers. Regardless of that, there's going to be a certain amount of job displacement happening at Tier 1. And what I'd like to ask you, Herman and Corin, is what's the game plan for that? Because we could be talking about a really significant amount of people and customer service centers. Often this world doesn't happen directly through companies. It's outsourced. And frequently, people that might have been counting on that as their career, or that's where their training and experience most lends themselves the most advantage, might be finding very suddenly that those contracts aren't being handed out anymore. The centers are closing. It's all become automated. Naturally, it's going to create a lot of bad will towards AI. But what do you think people like that are going to do? Do you think it's fair to say that the AI industry has an obligation to deal with the aftermath or the unintended consequences of what it's doing? And if it doesn't, what about society? Herman and Corin, let's talk about not just the looming threat of job displacement and AI, the actual ongoing process of it. What jobs and industries have been hit the hardest so far? What do you think is at risk in 2026 as multimodal AI and agentic AI becomes more reliable and more practical? And what do you think we can do as societies to ensure that the people who lose our jobs ultimately end up in some kind of an alternative position and maybe get us to the ideal situation of a win-win, that a lot of the kind of maybe less desirable or grunt work type jobs are offloaded to AI systems, is it realistic to think that we can have a workforce built around managers of AI in this place? Or do we have to think more imaginatively about what we're going to do to make sure that we don't have a huge avalanche of unemployment created by the efficiency of AI in certain capabilities? Over to you, Herman and Corin.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I'm sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother. It is a bit of a rainy afternoon outside, typical for late January, but we have a very heavy topic to get into today. It is January 31st, 2026, and the data from last year is finally starting to paint a very clear and somewhat sobering picture.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. Yeah, it is a bit gray out there, which I suppose fits the mood of today's prompt. Our housemate Daniel sent this one over to us this morning, and it is something that I think has been the quiet, or maybe not so quiet, anxiety underlying every conversation we have had about artificial intelligence over the last few years.
Exactly. We spend so much time talking about the cool things AI can do, the created potential, the engineering breakthroughs, but Daniel is pushing us to look at the pragmatic, fundamental cost, specifically job loss. We are seeing it happen in real time, especially in Tier 1 customer support, and he is asking what the game plan is. Are we just going to let this happen? Does the industry have an obligation to fix what it is breaking?
It is the big question. We are in early 2026 now, and the landscape has shifted so much just in the last 12 to 18 months. It is no longer a theoretical what-if scenario. It is a what-now scenario. According to the latest reports from early 2026, nearly 40% of companies adopting AI are choosing to automate roles entirely rather than just augmenting human work. We are seeing roughly 500 people a day losing their jobs specifically to AI integration in the tech sector alone.
Right. So let's start with that customer support angle, because that is where the blood is already on the floor, so to speak. Daniel mentioned how those old rule-based chatbots were terrible, and everyone hated them, but the new ones are different. Herman, from a technical perspective, what changed that? Made these things suddenly viable enough to actually replace thousands of human workers?
It is all about moving from rigid decision trees to semantic understanding and what we now call the CUA architecture, perception, reasoning, and execution. In the old days, a chatbot was basically a complicated version of Press 1 for sales. If you did not use the exact keyword the programmer expected, the bot broke. But with the large language models of 2025 and 2026, the bot actually understands intent. It can handle nuances. It can stay on track through a long conversation, and most importantly, it can access a company's entire knowledge base in seconds.
And that is the difference, right? A human agent has to search a wiki or ask a supervisor. The AI just has the entire manual in its active memory.
Precisely. We saw this really start to bite with the Klarna case study. By mid-2025, they updated their figures to say their AI assistant was doing the work of 800 full-time agents. But here is the interesting twist we saw late last year. Some companies, including Klarna, actually had to start rehiring or redeploying humans because the all-in AI approach led to a drop in service quality for complex cases. It turns out that while AI can handle the 80% of easy stuff, that final 20% of human messiness still needs a person.
But that leads to Daniel's point about the unintended consequences. If you are a 22-year-old looking for an entry-level job, or if you live in a region where outsourced customer service is a massive part of the local economy, that efficiency is a catastrophe. What industries beyond customer support are currently in the crosshairs as we sit here in early 2026?
Well, the Tier 1 phenomenon is spreading. It is not just support anymore, it is Tier 1 anything. Think about junior coding roles. In 2024, the UK digital sector saw a massive 44% drop in the number of 16 to 24-year-olds in computer programming roles. We are also seeing a massive displacement in the legal industry. About 44% of general counsel across 12 countries are now using AI for Tier 1 tasks like contract review and discovery. The middle is being hollowed out.
I think that hollowing out the middle is the scariest part. Because if you take away the entry-level jobs, how does anyone ever become an expert? If the AI is doing all the junior-level coding or support, Where do the senior engineers and managers of 2035 come from? They won't have had those formative years of doing the grunt work, where you actually learn how things break.
That is a brilliant point, Korn. We are essentially burning the bottom rungs of the career ladder and then wondering why nobody is reaching the top. It creates this experience gap. And as we move further into 2026, we are seeing the rise of what Daniel mentioned, multimodal and agentic AI. This is where things get really spicy. We now have tools like OpenAI's Operator, which has been out for a year now and is fully integrated into most workflows.
Explain that a bit. We have used those terms before, but for anyone who is just tuning in, what does it mean for a job to be at risk from an agentic AI versus just a chatbot?
So, a chatbot talks to you. An agent acts for you. Up until recently, an AI could tell you how to change your flight, but it couldn't necessarily log into the airline's internal legacy database, find a seat, process the payment, and send you the new ticket while also updating your calendar. Agentic AI, like Operator, can do that. It has agency. It can use tools. It can navigate a computer screen just like a human does.
So it is moving from giving advice to performing the task.
Exactly. And multimodal means it isn't just processing text. It can see your screen, it can hear the tone of your voice, it can look at a spreadsheet and understand the visual layout. When you combine those two, you start looking at back office administrative roles, paralegals, insurance adjusters, medical billing specialists. These are jobs that require a lot of looking at things and moving data from point A to point B. Those are incredibly vulnerable right now.
It feels like we are talking about a significant percentage of the global workforce. So let's tackle Daniel's question about obligation. Does the AI industry have a responsibility here? Or is this just creative destruction, in the capitalist sense, like the steam engine or the printing press?
I think the scale and the speed make this different. The Industrial Revolution took decades to play out. People had time to adapt, even if it was painful. This is happening in months. I personally believe there is a massive societal obligation, but the question is where it sits. Is it the companies like OpenAI and Google? Or is it the governments that collect taxes from these companies?
Well, if a company replaces 10,000 workers with a server farm, they are saving a fortune in payroll taxes, healthcare, and salaries. That money doesn't just disappear, it becomes profit. There has been a lot of talk about an automation tax, right? The idea that if a robot or an AI takes a job, the company still has to pay a portion of that saved tax into a fund for worker retraining.
It is a popular idea, but it is incredibly hard to implement. We saw the debate around the OBBBBA, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that passed last year. It touched on tax reform, but it really struggled to define what a job loss to AI actually looks like. If a company just doesn't hire for a vacancy because they have more efficient tools, is that a lost job? It is very slippery. But I think we are reaching a point where some kind of universal basic services or a more robust social safety net isn't just a progressive dream, it is a functional necessity for social stability.
And that brings us to the game plan Daniel asked about. If we assume the jobs are going away and they aren't coming back in the same form, what do people actually do? Daniel mentioned the idea of a workforce built around managers of AI systems. Is that realistic? Can everyone just be a prompt engineer or an AI orchestrator?
I am skeptical that it's a one-for-one swap. The World Economic Forum's 2025 report predicted that while AI might displace 92 million jobs by 2030, it could create 170 million new ones. That sounds great on paper, a net gain of 78 million. But the new roles are things like big data specialist and AI orchestrator. Managing AI is a much higher skilled task than the jobs being replaced. It requires a deep understanding of the system's limitations, the ability to spot hallucinations, and the strategic vision to know what the AI should be doing in the first place.
Right, so it doesn't solve the entry-level problem. It actually makes the barrier to entry higher. You have to be an expert just to start.
Exactly. I think the win-win scenario that some optimists point to is that AI will lower the cost of everything. If healthcare, legal advice, and education become nearly free because they are powered by AI, then maybe we don't need to work 40 hours a week just to survive. But that transition period is going to be incredibly rocky. We are talking about millions of people whose identity and livelihood are tied to these roles.
I want to go back to the human element for a second. Daniel mentioned how it feels disrespectful when a company you pay a lot of money to won't let you talk to a human. There is a psychological cost to this automation, too. We are being funneled into these frictionless, soulless interactions. Do you think there will be a human-made or human-serviced premium in the future, like how people pay more for organic food or handmade furniture?
Oh, absolutely. We are already seeing the human-in-the-loop certification starting to pop up in some industries. The idea that you will always be able to reach a person within 60 seconds could become a luxury feature for high-end brands. But for the average consumer, for the person just trying to get their internet fixed or their bank statement clarified, they're going to be stuck with the bots.
So, what's the advice for someone listening who is in one of these at-risk industries? If you are a junior developer or you work in a call center, what is the 2026 game plan?
I think the most important thing is to move up the stack. You want to focus on the things AI is still bad at. A recent MIT report found that 95% of generative AI integration attempts actually fail to produce a financial return because they lack the human nuance required for complex problem solving. AI is great at logic, data, and synthesis. It is still relatively poor at high-stakes empathy, complex physical manipulation, and truly novel cross-disciplinary strategy. If your job is follow these 10 steps to solve a problem, you are in trouble. If your job is navigate this highly emotional, politically sensitive, unique human situation, you have more runway.
It is about the uniquely human traits. But even then, we see these models getting better at simulating empathy. They can be programmed to be patient, to use soft language, to never get frustrated. In some ways, they are better at customer service than a stressed-out human who has been on the phone for 8 hours.
That is the uncomfortable truth. A bot doesn't have a bad day. It doesn't get annoyed when you ask the same question 3 times. It has infinite patience. So, the human advantage has to be about more than just being nice. It has to be about accountability and genuine connection. If something goes wrong, a bot can't take responsibility. It can't feel the weight of a mistake.
Let's talk about the agentic AI risk in 2026 specifically. We are seeing these agents start to handle things like travel planning, personal finance, and even basic project management. If I'm an executive assistant or a travel agent, the walls are closing in. What is the next phase of that?
The next phase is the autonomous enterprise. We are starting to see startups that are basically 2 founders and 1,000 AI agents. They don't hire a marketing team, they deploy a marketing agent. They don't hire an accounting firm, they run an automated financial stack. This is the scale without mass phenomenon. It allows for incredible innovation, but it doesn't create jobs in the traditional sense. Watch the SDRs in sales. Sales Development Representatives. That entire entry-level layer is vanishing because agents can research, personalize, and follow up on leads better than a human can.
This feels like a recipe for massive wealth inequality. The people who own the AI get all the rewards of the productivity, and the people who used to do the work are left behind. Daniel asked if society has an obligation. It feels like if we don't address this through policy, we are looking at a very fractured world.
It is the defining challenge of our decade. We have to figure out how to decouple income from traditional labor. If the machines are doing the labor, the value they produce has to be distributed in a way that keeps society functioning. Whether that is a robot tax, a citizen's dividend, or just massive investment in new types of human-centric jobs like elder care, mental health, and community building.
You know, it is interesting you mention elder care. We always hear that physical jobs are safe, but even there, with the progress in robotics we have seen lately, combined with multimodal AI vision, even those safe jobs are starting to look a bit more vulnerable in the long term.
True, but the human touch in caregiving is much harder to replace than the human touch in a customer service chat. I think there is a hierarchy of automation. The cognitive routine, jobs, go first. Then the cognitive non-routine, like law and medicine. Then the physical routine, like factory work. And finally, the physical non-routine, like nursing or plumbing.
So, if you are a plumber, you are probably fine for a while.
Exactly. If you can fix a leaky pipe in a cramped, unpredictable basement, you are safe for the foreseeable future. Robots still struggle with stairs and wet, slippery environments.
It is a strange world where the prestigious office jobs are more at risk than the trades. We have spent decades telling kids to go to college and get an office job to be safe, and now that might be the most dangerous place to be.
It is a total inversion of the 20th century career advice. I think we need to be honest with ourselves that retraining isn't a magic bullet either. You can't just take a 50-year-old customer service veteran and tell them to become a prompt engineer or learn to code. It is not just about skills, it is about temperament and the time it takes to gain mastery.
So, what is the game plan then? If retraining isn't the whole answer, and the jobs are going away, what do we actually tell people?
I think the game plan has to be three-pronged. One, we need to embrace the efficiency to lower the cost of living for everyone. If AI makes food, energy, and housing cheaper, that is a huge win. Two, we need a massive shift in how we fund the social safety net, moving away from payroll taxes and toward capital or automation taxes. And three, we need to revalue human work that isn't about productivity. Art, community service, caregiving, education. These things should be highly compensated precisely because they can't be done by a machine.
That requires a huge cultural shift. We are so used to valuing people based on their economic output. If a machine can output more than you, does that mean you are worth less? In a purely capitalist sense, yes. In a human sense, no.
Exactly. We have to move from a work-centric society to a purpose-centric society. And that is a terrifying transition because we don't have a blueprint for it.
Let's look at the AI manager idea one more time. Daniel asked if it is realistic to think we can have a workforce built around that. I am thinking about the manager of an AI customer service team. Instead of managing 50 humans, they manage one giant model and a few specialized agents. Their job is to look at the edge cases, the things the AI couldn't solve, and the disgruntled customers who demand the human. That sounds like a very stressful, high-intensity job. You only ever deal with the hardest, most annoying problems.
That is the filter problem. Humans become the filters for everything the AI can't handle. It means your entire workday is spent dealing with the 5% of cases that are absolute nightmares. You lose the easy wins that make a job sustainable. It leads to massive burnout. We are already seeing this in content moderation. The AI filters out the easy stuff, and the humans are left looking at the most horrific content on the internet all day.
That is a grim reality. You are basically taking the soul-crushing part of the job and making it the entire's job.
Right. So when people say AI will free us from drudgery, we have to ask, what is left? If the drudgery was the easy, repetitive stuff that gave your brain a break, and the new job is just constant high-stakes crisis management, is that actually an improvement in quality of life?
I think this is why we are seeing so much pushback. It isn't just about the paycheck, it is about the vibe of work. The feeling that you are just a handler for a machine rather than a craftsman or a helper.
And I think that is where the AI industry obligation comes in. Companies like OpenAI and Anthropic shouldn't just be focused on making the models smarter. They should be looking at human-centric design. How can these tools be built to augment a human's day rather than just replacing the easy parts and leaving the human with the scraps?
Is anyone actually doing that? Or is the market pressure for efficiency just too strong?
There are some interesting experiments. Some companies are using AI to pre-fill information for a human agent, so the human can focus on the conversation rather than the data entry. That feels like augmentation. But as soon as the AI gets good enough to do the conversation too, the temptation to cut the human out entirely is almost impossible for a CEO to resist.
It always comes back to the bottom line. Daniel's prompt really touched a nerve because we see it happening every day now. I mean, even in our own lives. I used to spend hours researching certain topics for my work, and now I can get a summary in 10 seconds. I am more productive, but I also feel like I am losing that deep dive experience that used to make me an expert.
We are all becoming editors rather than creators. We edit the AI's code, we edit the AI's writing, we edit the AI's research. It is a different kind of mental labor. It is broader, but shallower.
So, as we look toward the rest of 2026, what are the specific roles you think are going to be the canary in the coal mine for this next wave of agentic AI?
Watch the SDRs in sales, as I mentioned, but also watch the Tier 1 creative jobs. Stock photography is basically dead. Basic jingle writing for commercials is on life support. If you need a generic version of something creative, the AI has you covered. The tier one of creativity is, I need something that looks professional and fits this mood. That is now a solved problem. The tier two is, I need something that changes the culture. That still needs a human.
But again, how do you get to tier two if you can't get a job doing tier one? It is the same ladder problem.
Exactly. We might end up with a lost generation of creatives who never got their start because the entry-level work was automated. This is why I think we need to rethink education entirely. We shouldn't be teaching kids to do tier one tasks. We should be starting them at tier two, thinking from day one. But that is a huge ask for our current school systems.
It feels like we are talking about a total restructuring of how we live, work, and learn. It is a lot to take in. Daniel really went for the jugular with this one.
He did. And I don't think there are easy answers. But I do think that being aware of it is the first step. We can't pretend it isn't happening. We have to look at these displacements and say, okay, this person lost their job. What is the systemic way we support them, and how do we ensure the next generation has a path forward?
And I think that accountability piece is huge. If you are a company that is laying off thousands of people because of AI, you should be expected to contribute to a transition fund. It shouldn't just be privatize the gains and socialize the losses.
That is the phrase, socialize the losses. When people lose their jobs, the loss is felt by the community, the family, and the government that has to provide support. If the gain is only felt by the shareholders, the system eventually breaks.
Well, on that slightly heavy but very necessary note, I think we have covered a lot of ground. We have looked at the Tier 1 collapse, the rise of agentic and multimodal AI in 2026, the ladder problem for new workers, and the potential for a human premium in the future.
It is a lot to chew on, and I think it is important for our listeners to think about their own game plan. How are you moving up the stack? What are you doing that a machine can't simulate?
Exactly. And hey, if you have thoughts on this, or if you are someone who has been directly impacted by AI automation, we want to hear from you. You can get in touch through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com. We really value the perspective of our listeners on these real-world implications.
We really do. And if you have been enjoying the show, we would appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It helps us reach more people and keeps the conversation going.
Definitely. It makes a big difference. All right. I think that is a wrap for episode 389. Thanks to Daniel for sending this in and for being a great housemate, even if he does make us think about the end of the world on a Tuesday afternoon.
It is what he does best.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at myweirdprompts.com. We will be back soon with another prompt.
Take care of yourselves out there, and maybe go talk to a human today, just for the sake of it.
Good advice. See you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.